Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm still Judy Nathans.
And I used to be Robert Winters, and I'm going to try my best
Robert
to continue
Winters,
to be.
PhD.
Yeah, really.
We'll see how many people watch this show.
If anybody needs their head examined, I'm available for
house
calls.
Oh, well,
that,
no.
There we go.
That's not that kind of thing. Although, you can have that kind of PhD.
Yeah, really, really.
That's the people that like to call themselves doctors if they're psychologists. And they have a PhD.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah. It always struck me as weird, you know, that... So I'm a mathematician, but I'm a doctor of philosophy.
Oh.
PhD, right? So...
Oh, is that really what...
That's what PhD means, doctor of philosophy.
Philosophy of your subject?
Yeah, so that's why I can come on television here and
just philosophize,
you see? Because I have a doctorate. I can do
pontificate.
That. Pontificate. Yes. Right. So... actually, one quick thing, let's dispense with this quickly because it's not the big topic yet, but in terms of candidates, there is no new candidates never heard of have appeared, at least none who have filed with the state or otherwise declared. Yeah, but one previous candidate, Greg Morey, has reappeared. After dissolving his campaign, he will in fact be on the ballot once again this year. So I guess he's gonna have to like refile with the state to undissolve his campaign.
Do you have to, if you don't win an election, do you have to physically dissolve your?
No, you don't.
You just keep it open, right?
The truth, and this is what makes
it confusing. So why doesn't someone just keep it open?
Well, because the thing is, if you're maintaining, let's say, a bank balance, then you might have, there may be fees associated with it. You might want to just zero it out.
I see.
The other thing, too, there are filing requirements, which are not onerous. You'd basically just fill it up going, sorry, not doing anything this year. See ya. But some people don't do it. And
I see.
Greg Morey, for example, has a bit of a reputation for not filing paperwork. So he was assessed fines. So I think he dissolved it as a means of basically
saying,
forgive
me. So they don't make it that easy, which is good. Otherwise, everybody would just, hey, I'll put my
right
hand in the hat. Yeah.
But the thing is, there are a lot of candidates, including quite a few of them from 2017, who still have active campaign accounts with actual balances.
Paul Toner
is one of them. There was... Sivantse.
Oh, she does? Really?
Right? From last year. So there are some who are there. They still have balances. There are some like Adrienne Musgrave who's definitely running again. But the thing is that it's not...
I don't see her.
Well, I deleted a lot of them from the show. I'm only basically putting out the
people
information.
People that you know are
the ones who I really know are there.
See.
I actually have them hidden there.
I see.
I can just uncheck a box and make them reappear very quickly. But so there may be some, but right now we're at 15. You know, when you take, there are eight incumbents running, two previous candidates, and five new ones. Mm-hmm. So, all the discussion about modifying the ballot to accommodate 28 candidates or something could still happen, but probably won't.
And they have to have their nomination papers. They'll be available
July
1st.
You know, it's funny that the dates are actually creeping up quickly.
Yeah.
You know, I kept saying, that's not a way.
But they can get it any time after July 1st, but they only have till the 31st to have all signatures.
So this is where me and my buddies up at the Election Commission, we get together and chat every day because I live so close to where the Election Commission office is. So what I'll do is in the morning or in the afternoon or both, just because I'm out and about, I'll just drop in and say,
every day.
Let me tell you, it's so close to where I live that it is not a burden.
No, that's true. It used to be up over here.
Right. And they're my friends. Yeah. So, I like seeing them anyway.
Yeah.
I'll see who has pulled papers, as we say, who has returned papers with signatures when they get certified.
Be interesting after.
Yeah. So it's a little bit like a daily updates and a play-by-play.
All right, how normal is it for someone to pull papers before they open up a bank account?
They could do it. There's nothing saying you can't do it.
Once you pull papers, do you have to open a bank account?
No. In fact, you don't have to raise any money. But if you
could
are going
to
raise...
Could you use your own money for a campaign without reporting it there?
No.
Okay. So
because
you do
have to report campaign expenditures.
So then they really do have to open up an account.
Right. So, but the thing is that there is a provision. I don't, there are some candidates like James Williamson in the past who raised no money, spent no money. And there have been sort of issue candidates who've done that.
As long as you don't spend
that.
Money, you just go to forums and do your...
Yeah. So the calendar, I think the... I haven't checked, by the way, but I think the... I mean, basically all they do is they take last year's... 2 years ago calendar, and they change the dates pretty much. Mm-hmm. So basically it's going to be on Monday, July 1st is when nomination papers are available. Mm-hmm. And then they have to be returned no later than 5 p.m. on July 31st. Mm. And they'll certify signatures as they come in. So it's not like you have to wait till after July 31st to see if you qualified for the ballot. Most of the smart candidates will get close to 100 signatures. You cannot turn in more than 100. You have to get at least 50. Now, if somebody's so foolish that they were actually out on the middle of Mass Ave and they were just getting, signing up, anybody, you want to sign my papers? And people said, sure. And they signed up
and
78 tourists. Then they could actually,
stupid?
And then they turned in 100 signatures. And out of those 100, they got less than 50 certified. They would not be on the ballot.
Yeah.
So it is the wise candidate who keeps a copy of the database of registered voters to make sure, and
that
they check off
registered voters.
Yeah.
I could see getting more than 50 though, in case there's
a change. Absolutely should get more than 50.
Right. Because then
I mean, the thing is that and there were a few candidates in past years who were very proud to have turned in 100 or almost 100 signatures and got every single one of them certified. Mm. You know, it's almost like a contest. Typically,
okay,
it's like...
Can you sign more than one candidate's paper?
No, you may not. Okay.
Well, see, I don't think people know that.
Right, and that's sometimes what catches
people. Well,
then
how do the election people know who got in there first?
Very easy. As soon as somebody gets certified, there's a marker put in that says who they were certified for.
Right, but I'm just saying, say you turn in your papers.
Whoever gets them in first.
Oh,
that's
boy.
It. Rushed.
Oh, wow. You really want to do it before the 31st, if possible.
Oh, yeah. In fact, some people will start collecting signatures and start turning them in, like, later that day.
Yeah.
You know? So the thing is, they give you three sheets, each of which holds 40. So what some person might do is they'll take a sheet, they'll get 40 signatures, check them, cross out any ones that they know are not registered voters, turn them in, and then they might get, 38 signatures on day one or day two. And then they'll go back, get some more signatures, and then...
Are these official sheets that they get? They can't use something from last year?
Notarize the works.
No, I mean, it has a date on it, so you can't... Because if you had a sheet from last year, you could start getting the signatures ahead of time, no?
You could cheat,
I don't know. I'm just asking if it's official...
I think in principle, you're supposed to have your sheets notarized, and you sign under pains and penalties that...
I understand that. What I'm saying is if they had a blank sheet they didn't use from last year and
could they start doing it?
Or do they change those sheets every year to reflect the new election?
I don't know if they do or don't, but so I'm going to make up a lie here. I'm going to say the Cambridge Election Commission embeds a secret metallic strip into these
forms
that shows the date. So any candidate,
an old sheet and you collected those
any candidate
two days
who uses
before.
A prior years is subject to the pains and penalties of prison.
All right, you heard it
prison.
First here that I am paranoid
right.
about people doing that.
Right. Right. Anyway, it is kind of interesting. And one thing that also happens every year is, not every year, but typically does happen, is that there will be some people who are thinking about candidacy who go and pull papers but then never turn them in because they said, forget about it, right? And sometimes it's because once the word gets out that they're running, some incumbent says, I don't want that person running. So they chat them up and try and be their friends and then quietly explain how it would be a very bad thing for you to run.
You think that happens?
Yes, I know it happens.
Oh, okay.
So if you really want to be a candidate, don't listen to incumbents. Mm. Just do what you want to do, right?
Yeah.
It's that simple, really. I mean, believe me. These other realities about PR election campaigns, which I find kind of entertaining, which is that the people, it's this unfortunate reality that your greatest competitor in a PR election is the candidate most like yourself, because you're competing for the same voters, same base of voters.
Yeah.
So, it's one of those kind of cruel ironies, is that unless you've got some organizations sort of promoting a whole group, which could happen and will happen, I presume. And then they kind of have a shared vision. And I guess you can kind of put aside your competition and sort of, rah-rah for the whole team, right? Mm-hmm. So that could be a piece of how it plays out as well. So we don't know. I still don't know for sure what the big issues are going to be. I guess housing overlay is going to be one. Bikes, presumably, cannabis? And mobility issues. Cannabis. But that's kind of solving itself or carrying itself out. There's nothing to advocate for. You know, what's a candidate going to do? Say, I support legalization of cannabis. They go, well, you're 2 years late, buddy. It already happened.
Mm. Well, of places and
political candidates will have essentially nothing to do with that.
I know, but they will hear from their constituents or people say, if you allow this in my neighborhood, I'm not going to vote for you.
That's true.
Other things they said they wouldn't vote for.
But the wise candidate learns early that you should not make a claim to a voter do something that, in fact, you have no authority power to do because eventually they'll find out and they'll say, he was just zooming me. You know, and then that is not going to work for you politically. So be honest, boys and girls. You know, it really is true. You really should be real honest as a candidate, and because the voters will find out.
You know, we're just talking about city council, but I mean, the school committee may be more contentious this year. There's a lot of stuff going on there.
I don't follow it closely, yeah, but the thing is, I know there's been some friction and
around.
It's often about race and achievement gaps and are we doing enough, whatever. And a lot of it is just rhetorical warfare as opposed to substance, you know. But in politics, that's real.
But on the committee itself, conflict. There's conflicts.
Yeah. But, you know, now, are the voters all aware of that? Do the voters care about that?
Well, I think if you have kids in the schools, you do, but generally they don't get as many votes as they do.
And parents with children can be awfully motivated voters.
Oh, absolutely.
It's really true. Yeah. So that's been somewhat off my radar. I know there's one new school committee candidate.
Aisha Wilson.
I don't know whether there'll be other candidates or whether all six of the incumbents are going to seek re-election. We don't know
who's
yet.
Who's the newest on that?
The newest is Lawrence Kimbrough. Yeah.
I hope he's running again. He's good.
Yeah, so anyway, that'll be interesting. You know, there have been some years where the city council candidates would talk about educational issues.
Well, even though they really don't have, because he's the chair of.
Well, who's ever been mayor often gets intertwined in that. Craig Kelly has never been mayor, but Craig has always taken a very, very strong interest in the schools.
And right now, I think it's only Alana that has kids in the schools.
Craig's
have gone on.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, it's in Mark McGovern, right?
Oh, well. That's
true.
Are his
kids old enough to be in school?
Are they in school yet? I don't know. I know he's got his younger set, and then, maybe they are, but I don't know.
Right.
And the elder set's out of high school.
Yeah. So anyway, it's going to be an interesting season, and, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Right? I expect there'll be a few new names that I haven't heard of and haven't even heard any rumor of before all is said and done as well.
Well, there's definitely new names to people that may not know them just on your list here.
So
they're young.
Anyway,
people.
I've got the Cambridge candidate pages up there. Is still for all the incumbents. It's still the 2017 information.
Why don't we just show them what this looks like so they can go to it?
Yeah, already.
Very nice. You're the only people who really do this well. Oh, I mean, that's not true. But people do refer to this a lot.
The truth is that, I do it neutral. You know, it's completely neutral from beginning to end. I don't make opinions. I don't make I don't make recommendations who you should vote for. But there's always going to be, and there have been in the last few election cycles, some other parties who try and get some influence in on this process.
Yeah.
So there's been other people doing things that are sort of comparable to this.
So
some of them do things that I certainly don't
do. So if it's in blue, that means they have a page? They have a website?
That'll just take you to the old pages. Yeah.
The old pages, but not their website.
No.
Or it would be on that.
You know, I actually have had candidates complain to me. They just want you to click on them and then go right to their website. And there's a reason why I don't do that.
Oh, I see. This is a sample. This is a symbol. Okay, so you go to her website. Yeah. It has it right there.
And I don't know why the picture's not showing up here, because a picture should show up there. But,
well, it was before. So, but
Anyway, I'll.
There you are. There she is. Okay.
Anything that needs fixing, I'll fix.
All right.
You know, but the thing is, the reason why I would rather them first go to a candidate page, yeah, where then you can click on their own candidate website, whatever,
yeah,
okay, is that I also will give a bunch of topics to the candidates to comment on. Mm-hmm. I don't ask questions so much. I give them topics.
Mm-hmm.
And this way, it's at least one way in which I can at least request that as many candidates as possible will simply... will uniformly,
mm-hmm,
respond to the same topics. Yeah. So there's something that goes across
the
board.
Very nice. You really do a great job.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, we'll be doing it again, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, anybody like me or others who've actually been candidates themselves in the past, I have to say that there's always this little moment, like right around now, where you think, could I do this again? I don't really think
I would have to shake so many hands and smile when you don't want to.
No, listen.
Or you could be a real pain in the
We say never say never, right?
Oh,
but the thing is that, you know, I'm probably a little too much of a straight shooter, and I'll just say what's on my mind and be impolitic.
Right.
And I don't know whether sometimes you have to sort of play nice in a political environment, and I don't know that
it's
quite my cup of tea.
Yeah,
right.
No.
So
you have to play
maybe
nice.
If there was like a wrestling competition that was part of candidacy. You know,
oh my God,
that would be more fun,
Robert.
That's true. I'm getting a little older. It's tougher. Jeez. Yeah.
Against these guys that are like what 32, 22.
I could take them. I could take them.
Come on.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, so that's enough, I think, said for candidates. One of the things, we talked a little bit about mobility previously, but here's one other item that came up. There was a new zoning petition proposed at last night's meeting coming from two city councilors. It's Quentin Zondervan and Dennis Carlone filed for a hearing and report, refer to the planning board, the whole...
Was that an order, or what was
Well,
that?
The thing is you put in as a policy order, which is then referred... Yeah, so city councilors can introduce it.
I'm trying to think of it.
It's one of the orders, maybe 6 or 7 or 8 or something like that.
Okay.
But anyway, it was... I think it's fair to say it was motivated by some of the controversy down on Fulkerson Street with the Eversource electrical substation that's proposed to go in there. So they, now, I'll be right up front.
They want to amend Article 19.
They want to amend the zoning ordinance. Mm-hmm. So basically say that if you want to do a, it's interesting because it's not putting the onus on the utility company. It's putting the onus on a developer.
Mm.
At least if I read it correctly, and it basically says, unless you can show that your project is not going to have an excessive impact on the electrical or gas infrastructure for the city, then you will not be given your permit to proceed with your project.
If it finds that the utility impacts of the project would not be significant.
Now, the truth is, so how do you interpret? I don't know how you interpret that.
Yeah.
So if you're going to put up a lab building, for example, you can be as much in favor of net zero everything as you want, but it doesn't work so well with lab
Biogen,
buildings.
Biogen, I know, has all of their buildings are connected by some grid that they reuse energy. So
listen, you can.
Yeah.
I think we all agree with maximal energy efficiency, but the thing is, certain operations within buildings are such that you're never going to actually be on site net zero.
Yeah.
So they, you know, there's a bookkeeping way of being net zero, which is that you basically buy credits from elsewhere and you do all this and whatever. You know, personally, I think this is not the right way to do things. I think it's a kind of a reactionary zoning petition spurred by this flare up on Fulkerson Street. And I've never liked zoning that's based on reaction.
But what if it's not a zoning change, but what if it's just stuff? No, why can't they just add that as another requirement?
That's exactly what this zoning petition seeks to do. It basically seeks to alter the special permit granting criteria.
Oh.
So in other words, when you go through your Article 19 process as part of your seeking a special permit, You know, then in fact,
Well,
you know,
then I guess it does have to fall into there because they have parking study, tree study.
Right. So those are all in there now. So the thing is that whenever like a new building goes in Kendall Square, they have to pretty much demonstrate to the city that they're promoting alternate transportation. Mm. They're doing all sorts of wonderful things.
Well, I guess I do. Then it does fit here. I don't know where else you could do
it. Except that there's this sort of it harkens back to another time for me when we had something called the parking freeze. Now, the parking freeze, in principle, was put into place because everybody was concerned about clean air. Mm-hmm. But in truth, the parking freeze was put in to block and stop cold commercial development, especially in and around Kendall Square. The reason why we now have a vehicle trip reduction ordinance was pretty much to find a better way so that we were not having sort of this draconian cap on. I mean, because what was happening is that places that could have located into Kendall Square were saying, all right, screw it. We're going over to Alston Brighton. We're doing that. And they said, we can't do that. So they said, well, this is not good. It's not going to be good for the city tax base. It doesn't help to create the sort of the biotech center that Kendall Square has become. That none of that would have been possible under the parking freeze limitations. Let's be clear about it. And most people believe it's generally been a good thing. Anyway, the idea is if you put in a limitation that says you can't build unless it has like no impact, then you pretty much are just going to stop construction.
Would not be significant.
Well, what is significant? Greater than zero?
Well, what about sewer and water infrastructure? That could be significant.
It
can be.
Yet
that's in here. So, I mean, it's not like they're not having to reach certain things.
Right. But the thing is many of those things are actually discussed anyway because the city doesn't want to grant occupancy permits if, in fact, we don't have some of those things.
Do you think it could be more of an informal thing without putting it in there? Because
I don't really know. I think certainly in terms of electrical infrastructure, the problem isn't so much that an individual building gets cited that has electrical impact. The problem is that Eversource has been behind the curve for a very long time in terms of being forward thinking about electrical infrastructure. So to me, the target in this these initiatives should not so much be somebody who wants to build a building. So you know, require LEED, platinum, or whatever the highest. You know, if you want to put in really higher and higher performance standards for buildings, great. You know?
Well, you know, some of the buildings want that because it's their bottom line, what they're paying for.
Oh, honestly, it's a good sales pitch, too. Like, look how great we are, you know. And so nobody's building buildings now. Well, Dennis Carlone would point out that when you're building a building full of nothing but glass, it's intrinsically energy. It's not as energy efficient as it could be or should be.
Right.
So, all right, I'll give you that. But the big problem is you know, we have this problem in Central Square, where the electrical infrastructure, the existing electrical infrastructure, is inadequate. So is the problem that you shouldn't build a new building in Central Square, or that maybe you should be upgrading the electrical infrastructure?
Well, isn't that what they're trying to do, Eversource?
I mean, in a kind of a spotty way.
They didn't have an overview that was really, they weren't ahead of the game.
One of the greatest disappointments, and I think I probably said this over this past year, one of my biggest disappointments with, amongst many, with the whole Envision Cambridge process, they didn't talk about infrastructure at all.
Wow.
They really didn't. And
energy use and all
and
that.
And I remember, even as we were heading into it, Dennis Carlone and I both, at a single meeting, were saying how it's important to, you know, is to plan for infrastructure. Honestly, I'm sure it's in there somewhere, but it was never a point of emphasis, and I think that was a big mistake.
It's all about that, bridges falling down or red derailments, although that's more driver error, but some of it is...
Yeah, I mean, we have problems with transportation infrastructure, and I'm not just talking about white posts and bike lanes. I'm talking about red lines coming off the rails. You know, honestly, if you can talk all about housing and affordability, but unless you actually have a transportation network
that
expands
the
city base. So, you know, and modifications so that more of it happens in the burbs.
It's all connected.
You know, so we don't put enough emphasis on some of these structural matters that really.
Well, you always say you always like to point out we don't look at what's under the street. We don't think about it.
It's
don't
unseen.
Think about, I think about trash and garbage and where it goes all the time.
But most people don't. But you know, water, sewer, electrical. Yeah. Honestly, this is what really makes a city work. Yeah. You know, and it's not just the city's fault. I mean, honestly, the utility companies need to kind of step up here. And I don't know how you do that. I don't know to what levers the city has to force these issues. I would love it if the city could really kind of push the state legislatures to have a means through which we can be much more forceful in requiring utility companies, especially electrical utility companies, to be more proactive.
They're very reactive. They own their own utility, like Concord. That's why they can have municipal broadband or other places. If you own the utility, then you can operate it. But that's a whole other issue.
But of course, then the other side is when you own it, you got to keep it.
That's it. But,
and that means it's up to you. And there is financial exposure for a municipality if you have to.
Absolutely.
So if you were starting off fresh,
are the best.
Right. Yeah. But if you inherit. Yeah. Inherit aged infrastructure, and then with it the costs associated with keeping it up and upgrading it, then that's a big burden for a municipality.
Right, but if it's always been in the hands of a tenant,
right?
Usually these are smaller tenants that have done it. But.
Yeah. So honestly, there has to be some way to get the municipalities to give a little more oomph to.
So what did that get just passed on to be looked at by the?
Well, now unless I missed something last night.
Did anybody not vote for it?
I didn't follow.
There's something that people didn't vote for. I think
my focus
was
on the bid. Actually.
Right, but there was a lot of talk.
Oh yeah, there's another thing.
On the whole
we'll talk about this in a few weeks, perhaps.
Yeah.
But the thing is there was a proposal, as happens every 2 years, like clockwork, to put limitations on campaign finance donations from developers or anybody with business before the city.
Right.
You know,
campaign donations, that's what it's pay for play, all that.
Right.
That's July 8th, which is not on the calendar, but it was a July 8th meeting on government.
Right.
But I think Jan Devereaux voted against it.
She
and Quentin voted against something to do with adding the amendment. Okay. We'll go.
We'll talk about it again in the future.
I won't be here next week, but someone will.
Right.